Love, Thee, and I. Written and read by Fresney. Fandom As You Like It, Shakespeare. The roof of their shepherd's cottage leaked, but where she and Rosalind dwelt, it bore the sweetest bath. Their new home had but a loft room, a kitchen common space, a root cellar full of roots, and a covered midden where they might release their night soil. But where she and Rosalind were together, it were a 100-room palace, all in Italian marble, carved with sweet cherubs above the wide windows. There were no servants, but the clown, and he had no skill at food, or the thousand myriads that a sylvan dwelling in the woods were heir to. But where she and Rosalind labored together, were they chained at the bottom of Hades' mines? And they were chained together. They were the sweetest of labors. In that loft room, there was but space for a single narrow tick of meadow grass, and though it had long been their custom to sleep one next to the other, this was the sweetest of all. The pillow upon which Celia slept, it bore the sweet scent of Rosalind, for there she had lain her head, not across miles of sheets and dowdy cotton, but a bare hand's breadth away, a breath that could be breathed, but not reached across. These feelings were not new in origin. They were not the moment of a chance meeting in a bucolic dell, or in a marble hall. No, these feelings were the result of years of earnest study of her cousin's most deserving nature. It were easy to divine a divine nature to a stranger. Her most beloved cousin was no divine. She snored a tiny noise in her throat. She had a wicked temper, and a more cleverly wicked humor. Her jest some betimes could sting. Yet these feelings, not asked for, not desired, they had grown clever weeds in Celia's heart that then bloomed into brilliant flowers. All of this being true, to Celia, having put aside Celia, and Aeliana become, their palace exchanged for rude cottage, were a sylvan paradise. And yet, for Rosaline to have lost the palace of her birthright, to have lost her very sex, and become Ganymede, the page of Jove, for that very Rosaline to sigh, was to Celia a string most cruelly pulled upon her heart. There was nothing for it but to say, "Sweetest girl, though in ruddy buskins you now stand, have no fear. Soon my father, having lost both daughter and a niece, and no other heir besides, will relent, and word will come that to the palace and your deserved highest honor you may then return." Rosalind pushed back her roughly cut hair, like burnished bronze upon a carved ivory, and smiled. "Cause, sister, that is not why I sigh. I do not regret the palace where I was not welcome, and that should have been my father's to hold. No, I sigh over nearer pains, that having met Orlando, his father, beloved of my father, his skills manifest in his overthrow of Charles the Wrestler, on so brief a meeting and a parting, I sigh." "Oh," Celia looked away, and in the churlish smoke that emitted from their wooden stove blinked back tears. "So quickly then, you love, so soon you desire to put a man in your belly." "Oh, I!" Rosalind licked her lips then, "for such a sweet a man as that." Celia watched those lips and that tongue. "Oh, dear cause, your pardon. Wearing a man's martial bearing has had a rude change upon me. A curtle axe at my side and a boar spear in my hand, I find myself taking on manly manners. Your pardon." She bowed as a gentleman may to a lady that he has offended. I merely mean that his visage set my mind to Hymen, and the sacred vows that bind a man and a woman. Ah, Celia blinked once more at the billowing smoke of the stove, and retrieved their bread from its hold, so much hardened brick. Had they other victuals, she'd have consigned it as lost. As there were no other, she put it in the sludge of stew, to which the adding of bread could certainly do no harm. When she had gathered her thoughts, she said, "So were you moved by his face? I had thought you meant to seek a man based on his knowledge, being like unto yours." She went on delicately then, "For a man of gentle birth, he seemed most lacking in education." Orlando, what a name, Orlando! Education may be acquired, but such a great heart as his, so to defeat a champion of many battles, that cannot be learned. Celia stirred the great iron pot. Or may indeed be learned, as Charles himself did learn it. But what of his wits? On short acquaintance, his wits did not seem to slice and cut, and you always declared to hold yourself waiting for the sharpest of minds. Rosalind smiled, and moved some rushes about on their floor, to no great advantage. He is but a knife unsharpened. I shall take great pleasure in being his whetstone, upon which to sharpen his wits. But, cause, why do you batter at me so? Did you take some offense at him? Please, tell me. Celia stared down at the black iron pot that she then stirred. No offense. Merely, I wish you to be careful in how you give your heart. What did you know of him but that your father loved his father, while mine hated in kind? I know that I loved him from the moment that his unbearded face hove into my view. Rosalind cast aside her broom, but you are right, cause. I love him, but I do not know his heart. For all that is known to me, he has perhaps cast his eye upon some rude country maid, skilled in country matters, while I from the court am but recently derived. For him to see you, he cannot help but love you. Celia put aside the pot from the fire. Only ill could come of cooking now. An idea came to her then. She sat upon the bench before the table. If he were to woo you, how would you wish him to woo? Come, let Eliana be Rosalind, and Ganymede be Orlando. Your swain is come to you in your country kitchen. What now? Rosalind nodded. I would wish him to sit next to me. Then sit. Celia slid her hand across the rough wood of the bench, taking only one or three or 10 splinters in doing. No matter, for Rosalind sat next to her. And then, she could not help but prompt, I would wish him to take my hand and hold it to his breast, that I might feel his heart declared as mine. Rosalind plucked up Celia's hand and held it to her doublet. And as Rosalind, might I declare in turn mine own heart to be his? Celia felt her heart beating doubly quick, but she had not forsworn to be Celia. Was she not now Eliana herself, sworn to be Rosalind in her place? She moved to pluck Rosalind's unencumbered hand, to place it at her own breast, and therefore her beating heart. And in so doing, from daring to daring, I might move myself closer, that same heart a lodestone, seeking the unalloyed metal of my heart's desiring. She moved closer upon the bench, which slender line of Rosalind's woolen hose ran parallel to her own rough-spun skirts. Rosaline swallowed. Orlando, then, I might wish so close in the privacy of our rude exile, might steal a kiss. Her lips were soft and tasted of the wild honey that they had found in the root cellar. Celia's own lips parted at that longed-for kiss. One kiss, or 10. She returned that kiss in kind. Oh, 100 kisses I should so desire. The hand upon Celia's breast spread fingers wide to dip somewhat within her bounded chest, while bound heart heaved, exchanged breath to breath as lips gave way to tongues that spoke not words but sighs. Rosaline pulled away after some 100 kisses and whispered, "But a maiden's modesty must put an end to such kitchen exchanges, lest we grow to bake which should not be in a maiden's belly." Who was not Celia, not cousin, not sister, but Rosaline with her Orlando, whispered, having exchanged those kisses, and vows to wed, and then to Hymen called, and wedded vows exchanged. Orlando, I Rosaline, having taken you to husband then, and you Orlando, having taken me to wife, what now would you of your Rosalind? To bed. Rosalind moved not, but applied 100 more soft kisses of wild honey's origin. It was left to Celia to break away, but not away. Her husband's hand. For was not Rosalind now Ganymede? Did not Ganymede play Orlando's wedded husband's part? She led her husband up the stairs and into their loft. She closed the door upon the lower floor, with only a bare tallow candle then, by which to see her way. She put aside her dress, and only in kirtle stood. That, too, she then removed. But now, my husband, what would you of your Rosaline? To bed. More kisses, then, of greater warmth, as the sun is to a kitchen fire. It were Rosalind's turn to lose her doublet and hose. She lost her assumed gender, and perhaps her greater part. She whispered, "Oh, my love, it is all yours, as it has ever been." Celia paid tribute as her ambassador lips went to each of Rosalind's nation parts, in turn to pay them their due. Much homage she did pay in the form of lavish love. So many years did she have in store. She could not be quit of tribute until each of Rosalind's breasts had been paid their fit due, until she cried out, "Orlando!" and pulled up Celia's ambassador mouth to pay embassy to her own lips. Celia could take that name. She would take any name, and go with her wherever Rosalind went, her hands upon their own missions, not idle all this time, went to that place where for all her boar spear, Rosalind ever carried a woman's part. She parted Rosalind's sweet nest, and played surface tribute for a time, until her Rosalind cried out. Celia made journey deeper then, with 1, 2, or 3 fingers. Such she had practiced many a night, as Rosalind softly snored, and Celia imagined Celia's hand were Rosalind's fingers. Now Celia's hand to Rosalind these lessons applied, until Rosalind cried out sweetly as a dove, until Rosalind, clever Rosalind, applied herself to the returning honors, and played Orlando's part once more. Rosalind's imagined hands became Rosalind's hands, and Rosalind's lips, and ere long that tallow candle having exhausted itself, the imagined husband and wife slept. It were morning again, and Celia breathed in the sweet scent of their shared bed, and made the sweeter from their shared wedded bliss, to find Rosalind once more Ganymede dressed. Rosalind cleared her throat. "This is a strange time we find ourselves in, with we ourselves, not ourselves." Celia blinked at the sudden light of a freshened lantern. "Perhaps as we are given out to be brother and sister, it would be more fit if I were to take my bedding below, and the clown consigned to the hayrick." Ganymede would not meet her eyes, nor Rosalind either, nor even Orlando. So many faces, but not a one for Celia. Celia said nothing. Celia had no words. Eliana had no words. Rosalind had all the words, clever Rosalind. Celia went from there, now her chamber, and went for a walk upon this new day in fresh exile. There upon a tree she found bad fruit. All the trees in the forest seemed at the bearing of them. As she found Rosalind in a study of one such poem, she knew that the ill fruit had already been consumed. She put on her best sister face, for had she not years of long practice, and went to tease her cousin as a cousin at the consuming of them. Fair Rosalind, sweet Rosalind, cruel Rosalind, her witty jest then took on the cruelest cast, for Ganymede with her Orlando played Rosalind's part, while Eliana watched. Worse and worst, she played at Hymen's ceremony. She turned to Celia all innocence in her eyes, all the terrible wit to which she was sometime given, and said, "Why then, can one desire too much of a good thing? Come, sister, you shall be the priest and marry us. Give me your hand, Orlando. What do you say, sister?" Celia choked then. She choked on her own hopes, the bitter fruit of love that had like a weed grown in her heart and flowered to now bear the bitterest of fruit. "I cannot say the words. Fair Rosalind, sweet Rosalind, cruel Rosalind." She cast her eyes wide at her Eliana for her sake, and the words found their way through Celia's lips to wed that which she loved to what she loved. Even here in jest it were sorrowful. When Oliver, the brother of her love's love, courted, she meant to spurn him as she had so many. Instead, in the depths of sorrowing, his sorrowful desire seemed almost fitting, that Phoebe should love her Ganymede and wed Silvus seemed most fitting, that her father, the Duke, should give way before Rosalind's father, the Duke, seemed most fitting, that Rosalind should take to her marriage bed, that seemed most bitter, a bitter fruit indeed. Celia minded herself that women had died and worms had eaten them, but they had not died for love. Better yet smile at her newfound husband, smile yet more as her uncle, hearing of Celia's great courtesies to Rosalind, offered them rooms of honor within the ducal palace itself. What worms at the fruit of love! Better yet to say that all the world's a stage, and all these lovers but players, to be moved about until the next act. Epilogue. Now, it may seem, after ending most resolved in wedded state out of fashion, to find a lady in the epilogue. It may even yet seem unneeded, but in seeming it would not be so. It may be that after the first blush was off the rose of wedded bliss, and those rose hips brewed in tea, that Orlando may have had occasion to ask his wife why she went so often to visit with Celia in her wedded chambers. It may not be so, but was so. Just as surely as Phoebe went to lie with a raggle-taggle carter's lad within a thicket, and took much pleasure in her black eyes from him, as he took his pleasure of his boxed ears from her. But in answering to her duly wedded lord's question, Rosalind's answer was always the same. "I would visit my sister, husband, where we will spend our quiet hours speaking of you." If sometimes it was Rosalind's fancy to call out her own name in their wedded bed, it was of no matter. Orlando was not always there to hear it, as he took to his own chambers. Rosalind did betimes snore, and took great comfort of her sister, as their husbands took to the next act, a soldier's part, full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard. They went about on the deeds of men in the forest and in battle, while Rosalind and Celia, they played the ladies' parts. The end.